Don't just ride the index, seek to outperform it with Fidelity Active ETFs. Learn more at fidelity.com/active ETFs. Before investing in any exchange-traded fund, you should consider its investment objectives, risks, charges, and expenses. Contact Fidelity for a prospectus, an offering circular, or if available, a summary prospectus containing this information. Read it carefully. While active ETFs offer the potential to outperform an index, these products may more significantly trail an index as compared with passive ETFs. Fidelity Brokerage Services, LLC, member NYSE, SIPC.
Are you tired of not being able to get a hold of anyone when you have questions about your credit card?
Well, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night.
Yes, you heard that right. You can talk to a human on the Discover customer service team anytime.
So the next time you have a question about your credit card, call 1-800-DISCOVER to get the service you deserve.
Limitations apply.
See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You could take like every single thing that Chris Harrison said and just like add a comma and write after, you know, after every single thing, because that was the tone of it.
Yeah. You can't deny that everything is fine, right?
Right.
Welcome to Here to Make Friends, a HuffPost podcast about the Bachelor franchise, where we lovingly snark on The Bachelor and Bachelor adjacent shows.
Whether you love The Bachelor or love to hate it, we're here to break down every single delicious moment with you.
I'm Emma Gray.
And I'm Claire Fallon. So we're sitting here in the studio the morning after the second night of Bachelor in Paradise premiere. And I just have to ask, like, can you guys believe this episode ever ended?
It was a lot. It was 4 hours, and it felt like several days or weeks.
I felt like I was trapped in a room, and like no one could like see or hear me screaming to be released. That's sort of what it felt like watching it.
Yeah,
I mean, there were fun parts.
It was a real whiplash experience. You know, we oscillated between a beautiful love between two bachelor quote-unquote weirdos and the fact that my Twitter feed was full of news about actual Nazis in our country. So there were a lot of emotions happening.
It's a weird mix. Yeah. Nice mix of things.
And you hear the voice here of Brett Vergara, community strategist at BuzzFeed.
Heyo.
He's here to talk through. I mean, I really feel bad for you because this is one of the longest amounts of TV show we've ever had to recap at once.
But we're going to, you know, do our best to kind of get into the essentials because that's how dedicated we are to our professional duty as podcasters.
We'll figure it out together. we'll make it through.
Yeah, sorry guys. This might be a group therapy session.
Cast your mind far back to Monday evening at 8 p.m. Eastern.
Chris Harrison, alone, on a beach.
On an abandoned beach.
So far from the camera, always. just always at least
it's
5 miles
It's almost like
away.
He's just walking along. He's like, oh, hello. I didn't notice you there, that camera 20 feet away.
That is literally exactly what he was trying to give off, Claire.
Which is ridiculous. Like, it's the most scripted situation ever. It's like something really bad happened. Chris Harrison has to give a very carefully worded statement about it. Let's act like he was just walking along the beach shoeless, hoping to, you know, run into the perfect woman who likes piña coladas, and instead, here's a camera waiting for him to talk about Bachelor in Paradise. It's like, you're
just
not
caught him while
anyone.
He's on vacation.
Yeah.
He
was on vacation by himself. Yep. I don't know if they actually just chose to film this on an overcast day or if they had some sort of lighting situation. It looked very gloomy on the beach. There are like scattered pieces of like beach equipment and camera gear. They made it seem as though it was like a Pompeii situation.
Yeah.
Like everything was just frozen in place. This is the Pompeii of paradise.
But they have no problem leaning into the Pompeii.
Yeah, no. They're like, if we're
entirely fine with,
they
I don't know.
They are certainly milking this controversy that we all know, you know, occurred. And if you guys haven't, Claire and I did a couple deep dive episodes into that. So we're not going to really get too much into the particulars.
Which is good because the show did not either.
We're going to stick with that storyline.
They used it a lot for tension, suspense, drama. They never really talked about what actually happened or what was concluded happened based on their investigation. And we don't even get to that conversation at all until night two. But Chris comes out and is basically like, look, it was so hard on us when this happened. We all really suffered. And
is this
we
where
just,
you talked about the crew crying? Or no, that was later.
That was several times.
Yeah.
And, you know, Chris, you know, he was just heartbroken. And then he's like, but you know what? This is the most dramatic season ever. And then we get the intros to the contestants. It opens, he's like, we're going to go back 2 weeks because this statement, I guess, was filmed in between the sessions of filming. He's like, we're going to go back to when it all began. And it's suddenly it's just like normal paradise, yeah. Like perky, sunny.
They can't seem to decide during this episode whether they want to lean in and take these what happened really seriously, and whether they want to just stick with paradise as it is, just frothy and fun. And I think they sort of settled for this very odd middle ground in which they tried to do both, and it just felt like I saw what they were going for in all aspects, and I was just, like, confused how to feel about it.
Yeah, there was yeah. – well, and also, too, like, just going back over the old footage, there was just, like, this blanket of just gloom over it, like, something that was supposed to be this, like, oh, like, we're happy-go-lucky. It's just, like, your standard paradise, and then all of a sudden you just see DeMario and Corinne. It's like, this is a new time for me, and just it's like, oh, God, what are you doing? Like,
yeah.
It just was so stomach churning and
yes, stomach churning is the perfect.
Yeah. And I got I got a little bit of pushback on Twitter for basically saying, you know, the show shouldn't have used those in the moment interviews of Corinne and DeMario. You know, they show Corinne being like, I'm going to take it slow with these guys. I'm going to make it work for them. The underlying tone of that being, you know, LOL, look at what really happened. Mm-hmm. You know, she really lost her shit.
Right.
And then DeMario being like, this is my redemption arc, man. Like, I'm here to really win everyone over. The underlying tone of that being like, LOL,
That's hilarious. He didn't. Yeah.
Like, right, like, it just sucks that, like, they didn't have to show those things. Mm-hmm. They set it up with dramatic irony. We all know what's coming. And it's just really, like, gross to exploit that humor like they so often do. Mm-hmm. Like, with Lace. Remember with Lace when they show her, like, throwing away the wine bottles and they're like, it's going to be a different Lace. And then, of course, the payoff for that is Lace getting wasted with Chad. Mm-hmm.
Right, and I actually think the strongest, most enjoyable moments of the episode is where they kind of let that Corinne and DeMario just be characters sort of in the background and existing, but not, like, playing up their, you know, downfall for dramatic effect.
Not leaning into it so heavy like they keep on doing. I mean, not even before, you know, even before yesterday, even before last night or, you know, Monday night. You know, look at the promos.
The promos were disgusting.
It's like, oh, like, let's not handle this with any tact. Let's not handle this with any sensitivity. We'll just, like, lean right into it and trivialize this and be like, oh, look, we almost got canceled, but we're back. We made it. Like,
it's really weird because they want us to treat the entire cast and crew and production and the franchise
as
like human and not just that, as like look at how we're humans. If you prick us, do we not bleed? And yet they're using the really human suffering of these two cast members for their own profit. So it's like, it really stinks of hypocrisy, and it's really unsettling to watch.
And look, this is a reality TV show. We are not stupid as viewers. We actually know that this is an enterprise for money, in which people are paid to create situations that evoke reactions and drama. Like, that is the premise we're all buying into when we decide to watch it. So to see them sort of try to walk that back when we're at this moment where so many of us kind of understand more than ever how the sausage kind of gets made, it just felt like treating the audience as though we're idiots, and then basically shaming the audience or any quote-unquote, like, informed viewers for being insensitive to, like, the individual emotions of individual producers.
Right. They're really, like, it's like, how dare you consume this product in the way that we have created it and packaged and sold it to you? It just doesn't really make sense. But that was kind of the tone they took for a lot of this episode.
And it also seems like they're just very much overestimating how much they're viewers are into it for the drama of the scandal and just all of that.
Yeah.
Like, they're just really like, oh, like, you know, we'll just really lean into this as much as we can and play it up at every possible moment we can. And
I mean, I hope they're wrong. Like, I know that a lot of the, you know, people that we talk about the show with and that some people that follow us have expressed like a loss of interest in the show because of all this. But I'm hoping that there isn't like a really ghoulish contingent out there that's going to make the show feel like, you know, this was the right decision. I think that they should suffer ratings wise for this. And it was really difficult watching the show kind of as a professional, but also as a fan, to not feel really morally compromised by that. I think I should probably feel morally compromised. So
let's kind of dive into actually what happened. Right. So we get those kind of cheeky intros, which I always enjoy.
I always love it, you know.
Corinne didn't get one. I don't know if they didn't film one of her, if it was deemed too inappropriate given what happened, but she kind of has a little thing that's of just footage of her at the bar. It's not like a little cheeky filmed specific promo thing. So she but DeMario does get his. Well, I forget what his.
Yeah,
was.
I'm trying to remember what that. I think it was just like a very general like.
A lot of them were pretty normal.
The Amanda one where she's being chased by a pizza.
Yeah, a pizza and a black body stocking. It was very weird.
I assume it was a reference
to Josh.
To a certain individual.
Yeah, she shows up and kind of talks about her breakup with Josh. And she says something like really weird. Like she's like, oh, you know, there were a lot of things that were great with him, but something felt off. And then she kind of pauses and says, he's a sweaty person. I'm like, that's what felt off to you?
Later on, I think she alludes to it where she's like, I might have in the past interpreted someone being possessive as like flattering, but I'm not into that anymore. Okay, so we get all of them kind of arriving. Raven and Dean are the first two.
And then Christina shows up. She's interested in Dean. But she's like, oh, no, this is like a 2-on-1 date.
And who else do we have? Danielle M., Ben Z.
Then Iggy's there.
Iggy,
who I want to like, and he makes it very difficult.
I feel you. I very much, very much feel that.
I want to like him because all the guys like him so much. And I always have like a soft spot in my heart for like the friendships that you see on the show.
Oh, same. Yeah.
But it's like,
I think that's actually like my favorite part of like this entire franchise.
Me too.
Just like after the fact, looking at all their Instagrams, looking at them all hanging out, somehow being able to afford bouncing around the states. Like, it's like, I'm in Texas.
It's
I'm in LA.
It's the FabFitFun
box. I have a feeling sometimes their flights are covered by these sponsored events.
That's also very fair.
There are a lot of emotional moments for me in The Bachelor history, but I think maybe the most emotional moment is when Carly got dumped on Paradise.
And she went
running to Jade and like was calling out for her. And I was like,
friendship. They showed that moment leading up to Evan and Carly's wedding. Yeah. And I was like, that is the best moment.
Best
of
all time. So at this point, we're kind of seeing Ben Z is interested in Raven. Christina and Dean are gravitating to each other.
I can just say, too, like, I think one of the highlights for me, in if you can find a highlight in, like, all of this, all the shrubbery, is Ben Z's love for that dog. Just, like, it's my favorite thing.
I just found it so hilarious. Like, I was like, I get it. You love your dog. But this whole, like, I left my dog behind. It's like, well, What do you think is going to happen to the dog while you're gone? Like, it's not a child. Like, it's not a business. Someone else can take care of a dog, and the effect will be pretty much the same.
And this was one of those instances where you could tell that he had said a line once, and then they were continuously looping it in and editing it in to make it sound like all he did was talk about his dogs. And
I'm
he got
sorry.
The crazy music.
Saying that once is crazy. I left my dog to be here to find love. I'm sorry. If dating me is not a priority over your dog, then like maybe go home. I don't know. I'm sorry. I'm not a dog person. They're fine. If he said I left my cat at home, you know, I'd have
then
a lot
you
of
would
stuff.
Have
a
sympathy.
Yeah.
Okay, no, Claire.
Jasmine is there.
Jasmine has for some reason been aged down. Did you notice this?
No.
Her Chiron says 26. She was 29
on
Nick's season.
Rachel even
tweeted and was like Instagram storying. She was like, Jasmine, you found the fountain of youth. You're 26 now. Like,
Jasmine
is 29 or 30.
Yeah,
like,
she's definitely not
26. Let her live. Can she just be a, you know?
Well, Amanda showed up and kept being like, I'm still young. Like, I know that I'm kind of, like, aged. And I was like, girl, you're 27. She is 2 years younger than me. I'm like, I still feel like, I mean, there's that word still again. I feel very young. I don't know. But there's a lot of self-consciousness about that.
That just, like, it kept on, like, looping back. I feel like there was, like, multiple callbacks where it's like, girl, it's okay.
Yeah. Like, you,
like, you are young. Yeah. You are young.
Young.
Okay.
And you look perfect. I mean,
I remember from her bio from Ben season, she said she started doing Botox at 25. So she is just a perfectly.
Well, that explains why her face never moves.
Yeah. Jack Stone arrives and assures everyone that he is not, in fact, a serial killer.
It's good to know. It's very good to know. Rest assured.
I believe it, but, like, that doesn't change the fact that he looks like a serial killer.
That's fair.
I mean, both things.
You're like, no, no, Jack. It's not that people thought you actually were a serial killer. It's just that you resemble one.
You just give off some vibes.
Some murdery
vibes. General
vibes,
you know.
Yeah. And Alexis kind of approaches
from
the
sea.
She's just such a gem.
She's in her dolphin shark costume, and she kind of strips it off and is wearing, like, a flesh-colored bikini. And then she's like, wow, I was hot as balls in there.
And Jack looks dead at the camera and says, but what's her purpose for being here?
Oh, Jack.
You know, I'm into it. I like, you know, it's like I can.
Jack seems like a good guy.
Yeah. I do really strongly think that this is going to be like a redemption for Jack. Like, he has like some very weird like vibes to counteract like from Rachel's season. But I think that like he can.
Redemption for Jack.
Bachelor in Paradise redemption is meant for people like Jack, who, much like Evan, came off as quite creepy on their seasons.
Right.
Not through actually doing anything creepy, but then – so when you get to spend more time with them, you see their better qualities as opposed to, like, their weird hairstyles or teeth.
Or just, like, the very, like, everlasting smiles that seem to constantly be there.
Okay, so we have
DeMario shows up. Raven is really close with Rachel. And at this point, they had just, I guess, really learned about the whole – cheating girlfriend situation quite recently. So she's like, basically, he's fucked. We're not gonna go for his shtick. And when DeMario shows up, Chris Harrison basically comes right out and says, like, you had a girlfriend. Let's just admit it. And DeMario's like, no, I didn't have a girlfriend. And then Chris is like, well, did you lead her on? And he's like, I probably have. And he's anticipating a rough response from the crew, but he goes straight for Raven as like the queen bee of the crew to kind of get her on his side first. It is not super effective.
He does win her over, though, I'd say, eventually. fairly quickly.
It took a few hours. Yeah.
But, like, it's by the end of day
one. Yeah, sure. I guess, like, just time is, speeding up so quick
time
in this world.
Time is a flat circle.
Yeah.
But because, I mean, he kind of sits her down and is like, here's the thing, like, I'm all about good vibes. And she's like, that has nothing to do.
Yeah.
Like, what? And then he's like, here's my whistle. I'm going to blow it. And then cut to him being like, I definitely really smooth things over with Raven real quickly.
That went super well.
And I'm just like, oh, buddy, I think she's withholding judgment. But, you know, clearly she ends up liking DeMario. But we kind of miss anything that led to that. I think it probably had a lot to do with what happened off camera.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of DeMario interacting with other people also that wasn't shown, because they were sort of at a certain point, once they got those like weird questionable intros down and we saw a little bit of him and Corinne interacting, they kind of didn't show anything else of the two of them.
Yeah. Interestingly, Chris also asked Corinne if she has a boyfriend, which it was widely rumored and probably
it was
true
confirmed
that she had a
boyfriend. Yeah, I think it was confirmed.
She said she had a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So,
but was sort of, I guess, treating it as like a little hall pass situation.
Yeah,
I guess.
Yeah.
She says no.
But she says no. She says she doesn't have a boyfriend. They're all like, great, we got that on tape. So full steam ahead. Derek shows up. Alex shows up. beginning a very long and irritating trend of everyone just mocking Alex for his height. Yeah.
I just feel like there are so many things to mock Alex for.
Oh my God,
I find him completely frustrating in a lot of ways. And making fun of his height is just gross. Why go there?
And then over and over again, too. You know, it's just like this everlasting theme. You know, and yeah, like there are just so many things that you can – so many
like
things.
You're just giving us an excuse to feel empathy for someone that I have very little empathy for.
Yeah,
and like,
right.
And it becomes about just like other short people. Mm-hmm. It's like, oh, well, he deserves it. Well, what about like this really great guy over here who's short? Does he deserve to hear how pathetic his height is? Like it doesn't hold up. Mm-hmm. I think Daniel McGuire and Vinny – were on AfterBuzz last night, and they were just sort of like, it was all good fun. And I was like, nope, that's not a good defense. Yeah. I'm sorry. That doesn't work for me. But it was kind of cast-wide. Mm-hmm. Like, Alex's thing was his height. So, good stuff. Iggy, meanwhile, thinks that he and Corinne are going to have a thing, which is just so sweet.
It's just the beginning of many delusions Iggy seems to have.
He's like, I'm also the life of the party.
It's like, well, are you?
Yeah.
It's okay to not be the life of the party.
Yeah, we all have a little self-awareness.
Yeah,
you know,
like,
they both are a little deluded, which is something like Corinne shows up and she's like, I've never been the one to make the gesture. The guy always has to do that. I just let them come to me. And I'm like, you are the person who showed up in lingerie and a trench coat with whipped cream and got Nick to lick it off of you, which is fine, but that is you making a gesture. Just own that.
Right. Like, I think, if everyone just took a little step back and had, like, some self-awareness, like, plenty of people, you know, Robbie needs some, you know? Just, like, if everyone just had, like, a little more self-awareness, that's totally fine. You know, we all have, like, our little roles to play in all of this, you know?
Robbie has the amount of self-awareness that you would expect from someone who looks like he's made out of plastic.
I think he's just been continuously adding hair product since JoJo season.
Yeah.
Like just pile it on. Yeah.
I think that that's a clip-on, that thing. that he has this new wing of hair that's just kind of
it's gotten longer since JoJo season, certainly, one side.
Also, I did notice in, like, the – I actually don't really know how much time it was in between, like, their break, but
– 10 days.
Yeah, 10 days. The hair, I feel like, changed dramatically.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
No, like, you know, like, in the very first one, it had, like, the blonde stuff going on. It was a little bit longer.
I think the first
– when he had, like, the date with Raven, like, and all that, and she kind of went after him for his hair, like, and all that. It's like he went home. It's like, okay, I need to, like, just mess with this a little bit. It's still, like, the general same vibe, but it's, like, doesn't have the highlight. It doesn't really have, like, the strand going down.
Oh, man,
just, like,
I miss that.
Yeah, the strand that's just, like, permanently, like, in this position. I don't know.
He doesn't show up until later in the episode, but since we're talking about it, like, Chris Harrison really calls out his hair, and he says, yeah, it's a little more scraggly than it used to be. I was like, buddy, that's not the word. But it does really – like, he is one of JoJo's guys. She was really into guys with the haircut that I've always considered to be – the European soccer player haircut, but that is now the official haircut of the alt-right. But he's kind of melded it with the Trump.
It's like the
swoop that's like sculpted over maybe a thin patch.
Yeah, well, I don't really know how it works. Yeah,
like it's not straight back from the forehead. It's kind of just like molded around the forehead. Like it's a very
I think it's quite involved.
People were speculating about a flat iron. I don't know if he needed a flat iron, but he definitely needed product to make that happen.
Which also, I mean, this just like goes back to think like even on, you know, JoJo's season, like they only have so much space. So like how much of a suitcase was just like so much?
I mean, most of it was offensive shirts and swim trunks.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. The other half.
the other half was just crates of hair.
Also, I would not be surprised if Robbie was one of the people who just was like, well, fuck the rules. I'm bringing an extra suitcase of hair products. A lot of them do that.
He was like, look, you're going to want me to have my brightly patterned swim trunks. Okay. Like, this is a visual treat for everyone.
Necessity.
Okay, so but he shows up later.
Yeah, he shows up later. Lacey arrives.
She's like, I'd rather be known as being the girl who came in on a camel than not be known at all.
And we're like, you're not known at all.
Instantly, everyone is like, you came in on a camel? Like, who are you?
It's like, I can, like, really empathize if, like, just no one really knows who you are. But it's like, don't try to, like, make the camel a thing. Because, like, literally. It's
no
like,
one remembers
yeah,
that.
It's like, oh, yeah, now that I'm seeing the footage, I vaguely remember that happening.
Yeah.
But
it's not, that wasn't a discussion piece.
Yeah.
It was almost like when, like, and Matt seems great and is not annoying about this that we've seen, but people kept being like, oh, he was the penguin. And I was like, I have no memory of who showed up in a penguin
costume. I remember that.
Yeah. I remember that, like, more than the camel.
Certainly.
Yeah.
Fair. Because it was on him.
Mm-hmm.
It made squeaking noises.
Yeah. So Matt is another one that arrives in his penguin outfit. Diggy arrives in his glasses.
Very cute.
Good glasses. Very good glasses.
So good. I think they're Warby Parker's. I think I have the same one. Nick from JoJo's season has his Saint Nick.
That I remember because he came dressed fully as Santa.
Fully as Santa.
And it was a very asexual choice of, or even anti-sexual choice of costume, I remember thinking.
And we see that Nick has come into paradise, like, for Jasmine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
He's very clear about that.
He's there to meet her. She has never dated a guy with such light hair, which I sympathize with. It's hard, you know, to date a blonde man when you're used to dating brunettes.
Yeah.
But, you know, you just got to open up your mind.
Yeah. Heart wants what it wants.
It does. You know? And it wants a dark hair, as it were. But then, like, Lacey really trying to get in the mix here is like, Nick, make out with her right now. Just do it. Thanks, Lacey, for that. Vinny is here. Did we see Vinny come in?
No, we did not see his arrival.
All right,
it was
like,
very
thank
weird.
Thank you for confirming that in my head, because I was like, when did all of, like, I mean, granted,
I literally have in my notes, oh, Vinny's there.
Yeah, I said, also, Vinny is here?
Yeah.
Okay, good.
Because, I have, like, such a problem where I'll be, like, watching and, like, you know, trying to keep up with Twitter and all that. It's like, oh, I just missed, like, a major plot point. It's like, I thought that was a thing with him. It's like, did I miss this, like, back and forth with Chris? Like, am I –
that's
what
happened
with time?
To me a lot.
Yeah.
But if all three of us missed it,
okay,
it probably didn't happen.
I think we're okay.
Yeah. So should we discuss what we did see of the Corinne and DeMario footage? Because that kind of was front-loaded.
Mm-hmm.
We basically see a few different people talking about how Corinne and DeMario have made a connection. And we see them jump into the pool fully clothed. Mm-hmm. And Alex is narrating that it's 4:30 p.m. and they are having a one-on-one Top Gun moment in the pool. And that's kind of all we see.
Yeah,
they actually don't
even
show them making out at all.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. They're just kind of like swimming and like – cuddling, I guess, in the pool with their clothes, with like not swimsuits, with all their clothes on. They're clearly quite drunk, but
also
no nudity, no like.
Also, they are
out.
Definitely not passed out, which
right
was some of random reports.
But we do know that the footage of the incident, quote unquote, in question, wasn't aired. So, like, what did we really learn from this?
Yeah.
Nothing. Mm-hmm. Thanks for showing
it. Yeah, that was actually what I was going to bring up. Something that kind of bothered me is that I've seen in some interviews cast members, including DeMario, treating it as though, or that maybe that perhaps there's a disagreement about what that footage was, because he seemed to imply in an interview that I saw on either ET or EW that the incident in question happened directly after the footage that we saw. We also saw Corinne actually put out a statement saying that was not the incident that occurred in a hot tub later on in the evening, not in the middle of the day. So, who knows?
We don't know.
And we don't know. The show, I feel like, tried to make this odd nod to be like, see, now you've seen it. Now there's no questions. And the truth is, if we're never going to see the footage, then we're never going to be able to make an
actual
judgment.
And we haven't really been told even what happens in the video, just that the conclusion was no wrongdoing. So, you know, that doesn't really change. They never really get into the details of what actually happened.
And then, you know, we kind of shift on to other storylines, including
Derek
and Taylor.
No.
So I've always liked Derek. I've always liked Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Something about the way that Derek began to approach Taylor just made my skin crawl. I can't explain it.
Wait, I'm trying to remember exactly, like, how it started.
So we see, I mean, I don't know if this is the first thing, but this is the first, like, real conversation we see between them is, like, they're looking at all these guys hanging out nearby. And Derek is like, oh, yeah, it's too many men. I saw, like, a pretty damsel in distress, and I just had to come over here and talk
to
her.
Such a lie.
You're so in distress. And she's like, I want a man who can take me into the woods and build a fire. And he's like, well, I'm flipping a house. And she's like, no, that's not what I'm saying.
Yeah. She's like, camping.
And he says, that sounds dirty. And she says, it's supposed to. And I was like,
And all I could think is that anyone describing taking me into a forest sounds murdery.
Well, maybe the murdery vibes are just switching over. Like, Jack is passing the torch on over to this woods talk.
But this is clearly a very instant connection. And we see that, you know, they seem to right away be an incredibly steady couple. So good for the two of them. I agree. I always liked both of them individually. And there's something sort of satisfying about seeing two people who took a lot of shit on their respective seasons kind of like get the nice romantic edit.
And especially with Taylor, like, I've always thought that she was someone who just, like, got way too much of, like, the brunt of things, which, like, just did not make sense to me. You know, it's like,
because there were
specific things, like, just, like, specific moments, like the whole, like, bury it into the ground emotional intelligence thing that just, like, is on a loop. But, yeah, and, like, she somehow became the, you know, like, the villain of her season, weirdly. So it's great to see, you know, her hit it off, like, immediately. I have a lot more faith in that one. You know, like, obviously, like, we saw, you know, some relationships or some, like, connections, like, right off the bat. But I don't know. That one seems a little,
like,
more
substantial. Like, they seem to, like, Derek has always seemed, based on the admittedly little that we know of him, like, someone who is drawn to sort of self-confident, intellectually geared women. And women that are a little
outside of the normal bachelor mold a little.
Yeah. And so he definitely, you know, that seems like a good match with Taylor. And Taylor, you know, has, like, came in, and Jasmine said a similar thing about herself, like, not really expecting anyone to be interested, which is always a really sad thing to hear. I'm like, why did you come?
Yeah.
But I think Taylor probably came back for redemption, and it seems like she's getting both. Like, she came in and she was like, wow, this cool guy really likes me. And that's, like, a really exciting feeling that we get to see happen.
Actually, speaking of that, though, like, that, I think this happened, like, really right after Taylor and Derek, like, hit it off. But, like, Alexis said something that was, like, so heartbreaking, where, like, I think they were looking at the situation with Taylor and she was like, oh, like, yeah, like, you know, I'm happy for her. Like, she deserves it. And then she was, like, kind of, like, insinuating that, like, she didn't. I was like, Alexis, like, like, I think she's kind of in that same camp where.
Well, yeah. Alexis reportedly has a boyfriend.
So perhaps she's not really looking at one point.
She said something that, like, suggested that maybe she wasn't someone who needed to find love. Which was
Alexis is there for the lulls and the friendship. I do not fault her for that.
That works.
And, you know, we find out at, I guess, sort of toward the end of the day, Chris Harrison shows up and Lacey says, you never know what you get with him. Either it's good news or bad news. And I was like, it's okay, like, well, so those are two pretty clear options.
Yeah, literally all
the commentary is just wholly unnecessary.
And so he drops some big news, which is that Jorge, the bartender, is leaving to start his own business. Jorge's, which just, like, really puts a smile on my face.
I love Jorge so much.
I got, like, so emotional over that, you know? Just, like, oh, like, I was not expecting to go into, like, Bachelor in Paradise viewing, like, and get affected in like, a way like that. I was like, damn it, like, ugh.
It's also, like, it was sort of funny to see this guy who has gotten hopefully from the show enough of a lift to like make this dream closer to reality. And
people
saying, you know, I saw a lot of reactions like, oh no, they fired Jorge. I can't believe he has to leave. And I'm like, guys, this is the best possible scenario for him.
No,
like,
do you think he'd rather be doing this? This is real. He didn't get fired. They love him as a character on the show. Mm-hmm. And if you go to his Instagram, a ton of former cast members are just like, I love you, Jorge. We miss you. Like they, because they sit and talk to him a lot. So the people from past BIP seasons, I think, actually got quite close with him. My friend did text me and say, like, you know, if I ever have a bachelorette party, I now know what it's going to be. It's going to be Jorge's.
Yeah, so it's real. And
I support that.
And that's what I want my next vacation to be.
Yeah.
And this is how I'll know if Greg is listening to the podcast, as he plans the vacation. So
there you go. All right,
just
so
a
take
little
note,
pro tip.
Take note. All right.
So then Wells comes in. Is going to replace Jorge.
Which I'm very here for.
And this is like the best possible deal for Wells. He has none of the pressure of having to be in like the BIP dating scene. I heard an interview that Amanda gave where she said he got to keep his phone. He got to stay in the hotel. And he was like a member of staff and he just got to hang out with everyone.
I mean, he did have to, I guess they have to give him that stuff to compensate for the fact that he has to like actually work the bar.
Yeah.
Like
he is a
cut all the limes and like make all the drinks.
Which I feel bad for if like he doesn't actually, I don't think he has like experience bartending. So if someone's
asking. I wonder
how
complex their requests
well,
are.
Well, someone has to.
A
like,
lot of people have experienced bartending.
A white
restaurant.
So,
yeah. I mean, like, that's getting a little bit, you know. So.
It's also just, like, not a drink I would be prepared to make on a beach.
Yeah.
Like,
oh,
no
yeah.
one ever wants, like, a milky
drink. Yeah, just, like, what's
in 100-degree weather.
I want, like, a nice milky drink and then get into my
Sounds
swimsuit.
Terrible.
And just, just get that bloat fully displayed.
Well, we know how much pizza they eat down there.
True.
Okay. So Christina and Dean go on a date.
Oh, by the last thing.
Oh, sorry.
Women are handing out the first roses for the first time, which
I
is the least exciting
that
twist
roses
ever.
Are happening because we haven't
just,
seen any.
Believe it or not.
Maybe in 2 weeks we'll see.
Right.
We'll
Dean and Christina go on a date. The dates that we're seeing like are pretty just like they go, they have like a dinner, one small thing happens. I don't have any feelings about it except that Dean and Christina are super cute.
Yeah.
I love both of them. And
they
have kind of a sweet conversation where they empathize with each other's, you know, fraught childhoods and I assume kind of working through those things on national TV.
Yeah.
And she comments on his teeth. She is a dental hygienist.
Oh,
his
I always
teeth
forget that's
literally
what she
has. Right.
Her teeth. His teeth literally at a certain one scene, it was dark out and he kind of
just
is like laughing.
Yeah.
And it was like a beacon of light flash. It was too white. I mean, I'm going to be the one lone dissenter on this.
It reminded me of like the Friends episode. Like
yes.
I remember like when I first was seeing Dean's like smile on Rachel's teeth and just like beam up the entire room. It's like this is reminding me of Ross.
Yeah, it was. I'd never seen it like light up a dark a room like that. And that's really what it seemed like.
It's possible.
Meanwhile, Danielle is hanging out with Wells at the bar. And this was, I loved. Danielle and Wells are from Nashville and they're really good friends. And they were friends before they went on the show. And so she's like kind of, she's really getting a great deal. Like she's getting to like date hot guys and her, like one of her best friends is there.
Right.
Plus she gets to speculate about whether she should finally just take a chance on Wells.
Apparently they like went on one semi date years ago, but like both agreed that they should be friends.
Yeah.
But maybe not.
Well, she said that little like cliffhanger. It's like, oh, maybe you should be the kind.
I
and I was like,
tell,
what's
though,
happening?
If that was taken from an interview about someone else.
Yeah.
Because like, they have both individually said, like, we're very good friends.
I feel like that's also something that you might say if you're just like,
oh, no,
you're
true,
just like, but he is a great guy. Maybe he's the kind of guy I should give a chance to, but I'm not going to, you know? And then we get kind of really into the nighttime portion. Nick is getting too drunk to talk to Jasmine, even though
I appreciate that
focus.
Jasmine is just like,
just like
I'm
nope.
no,
yeah,
you
like,
are slurring.
Yeah.
We are done here.
Yeah.
So she goes in and talks to Matt instead while Nick gets kind of a counseling session from Taylor, who's always like, I'm not going to be the counselor. And then she's totally the counselor. She's like, yeah, Jasmine is really special. So what do you like about her? Yeah, you're too drunk for this. Like, I'm in charge of the situation. Yeah, and she has a nice chat with Matt about working on Disney cruises.
And so, yeah, and I appreciated that Matt actually asked a substantive question of, like, what do you do in the real world?
Yeah.
What has your life been like?
Yeah.
And he seems like a very thoughtful guy. He's like, oh, I see why Rachel liked him.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, definitely. And so the next morning, you know, we kind of see a little bit more of Corinne and DeMario in that it is the morning after the alleged incident. And they're sitting next to each other with the group eating breakfast. And they chat a little bit with each other, with the group. It almost feels like a little, like, by the way, they were talking afterwards.
It's like, see, look.
Yeah. So that was really the last we saw much of them as a duo. Because it seems like going forward from there, the next day of filming, DeMario is really kind of talking to Alexis and Corinne is more talking to Vinny.
Yeah.
And meanwhile, Iggy is hoping for Lacey's rose. But she comes down to the beach to tell him that she has to leave because her grandpa just died.
This was really sad.
Yeah.
And as much as I tend to find Lacey a little annoying.
Yeah.
Like, I lost my grandfather recently. It's hard to get, obviously, any news of a loved one passing away and to have to explain that on national TV and be around a bunch of people that you don't actually feel close to. Like, that's
And I found it
difficult.
Like, often when this happens, they'll just be like, so-and-so had to leave. But they actually had her do, like, an in-the-moment where she talked about how she wished she had a boyfriend to support her through this.
Right.
And I was like, this is personal. Like, I know this is a reality show about dating, but this feels too personal.
Yeah, no, right, like, right, right, right.
Like, let her go.
Yeah, like the fact that there was, like, enough time. It's like, okay, I know you have to go, but let's just do a quick.
Could you just give us your thoughts on how a successful stint in paradise might make the death of your next grandparent easier?
It's like, if you could just go over to, you know, go over to Iggy, just have a little sit down.
This is also where I fully just left Iggy.
Oh, my God. Like, I know.
He couldn't even properly feign empathy for the fact that this girl he had attached himself to had lost a grandparent. Then he went on to say she lost her grandmother.
Oh, my God.
And
like, Lacey's retreating back is still in the camera. And he's like, hey, guys, her grandma died.
I might not get a rose. Sucks for me.
Yeah, I was amazed that just like the next sentence out of his mouth after acknowledging the news is like, so I guess I'm screwed. Like, just like that's clearly where his heart was. It's like, all right, Iggy,
He's like, oh, I was trying to manipulate this girl into giving me her rose, but like, then her grandpa had to go and die.
That's so inconvenient.
I mean, her grandma,
for me.
Her grandpa.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whatever.
Or whatever it was.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We're going to take a quick break, but we'll be back with a lot more commentary on this epic several episodes of Bachelor in Paradise.
And epically disturbing, I would say.
Yep.
We'll be right back.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp.
Lately, my social battery has actually been full to bursting. I feel like I've barely been able to see anyone all winter, especially with little kids at home and constant daycare bugs. And I'm just like dying to get out there and see some people. And, you know, it's actually been kind of hard at times over the winter to feel like I'm just desperate to see friends and I don't have time to do it.
I feel like we're constantly trying to regulate, like, what's the correct amount of social energy? What kind of space do we need to carve out to actually give ourselves the space to socialize? What space do we need to carve out to give ourselves time to actually recharge? Either way, therapy can give you some self-awareness to build a social life that doesn't drain your battery or store it up a little too much.
If you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try.
It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule.
Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists anytime for no additional charge.
Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp.
Visit BetterHelp.com/love to see it today to get 10% off your first month.
That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/love to see it. If you have a cat, you want your cat to be healthy and happy because, of course, that makes you happy.
But since you know, people aren't mind readers. We don't always know when our cats are unwell.
So helping us keep tabs on our cat's health is just one reason you should use Pretty Litter.
Pretty Litter's ultra-absorbent crystals trap odor instantly. No more cat bathroom smell.
Pretty Litter's super light crystal base also minimizes mess and dust.
Here's the coolest thing about Pretty Litter. It actually changes color to help monitor early signs of potential illness in your cats, including urinary tract infections and kidney issues.
Plus, Pretty Litter ships free right to your door in a small, lightweight bag.
Our producer, Talon, has started using Pretty Litter for his cats, and he is a huge fan already. He's found that, like, the crystals really do soak up that odor, and cleaning the litter box is easier than it's ever been because it doesn't get all like weird and clumpy inside, which I remember so well from cleaning my cat's litter box.
Pretty Litter helps keep tabs on your cat's health and keep odors down.
You and your cat are going to love Pretty Litter as much as we do.
Go to prettylitter.com/LTSI and use code LTSI to save 20% on your first order.
That's prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI to save 20%.
prettylitter.com/LTSI, code LTSI.
Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Are you one of those people who thinks they don't have time to prioritize wellness? Yeah, guilty.
Well, Claire, Allo Moves is here to change that whole mindset for you.
The app makes it so easy to keep your wellness routine on track because they have everything in one place. There's yoga, Pilates, fitness classes, there's mindfulness and self-care tips, even healthy recipes, and so much more.
It's kind of wild how far-reaching Allo Moves goes. And their classes range from 5 minutes to an hour. It really just depends on what you have time for that day.
Trying to get in a good sweat? Then you've got to try their award-winning workouts like sweat-inducing yoga flows, HIIT classes, or reformer Pilates workouts with or without weights.
Or you can find stress relief with things like meditations, affirmations, or face yoga.
It's so hard to prioritize wellness when you have a busy job or kids or both. And now that I have both, it's so important to me to be able to squeeze in a workout when I have that random 5 minutes to an hour in between tapings after bedtime. It makes such a big difference how flexible it is and how easy it is to get what you need from the app.
Unlock your personal wellness routine with Allo Moves.
Go to allomoves.com now and use code LTSI20 for an exclusive 30-day free trial and enjoy 20% off an annual membership.
That's allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
allomoves.com, code LTSI20.
One in five Americans have learned a new language on their bucket list.
If, like us, that's you, make 2024 the year you finally check it off the list with Babbel.
Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks.
Studies from Yale, Michigan State University, and others continue to prove Babbel is better.
One study even found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester at college.
Oh man, could have saved so much time. Plus, all of Babbel's 14 language courses are backed by their 20-day money-back guarantee. I recently was in France and Portugal, and I was trying my hand at getting more comfortable with French, really brushing up a little bit, and I found Babbel so helpful. I'm not going to say that I like arrived all fluent, but I did feel much more comfortable ordering food in restaurants, asking for directions, reading signs, speaking to people when I was buying something without having to constantly be consulting a language app.
Here's a special limited time deal for listeners.
Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/LTSI.
Get 55% off at babbel.com/LTSI.
Spelled BABBEL.com/LTSI.
Rules and restrictions may apply.
Let me set the scene. Imagine upgrading your wardrobe with luxury essentials at actually unbeatable prices.
I love it.
Quince is here to transform the way you shop with a range of high-quality items priced within reach.
Like 100% Mongolian cashmere sweaters for $50, organic cotton sweaters, washable silk tops, and timeless 14-karat gold jewelry.
The best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% less than similar brands. We truly love to see it.
By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to us.
And Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing practices and premium fabrics and finishes.
I love Quince, and I actually have a couple recent Quince purchases that I'm really excited about. I just ordered the Glow Boho hoops to have like kind of a chunkier version of my usual gold hoops to wear, like maybe on a date night or something. And they are beautiful. They're everything I dreamed of.
Indulge in affordable luxury.
Go to quince.com/LTSI for free shipping on your order and 365-day returns.
That's quince.com/LTSI to get free shipping and 365-day returns.
quince.com/LTSI.
Actually, this is when Robbie shows up.
Kendall.
They're already, and with Lacey leaving, the disparity is still even wider. There are like more dudes than women, but the women are like, we need more men.
Yeah, it's like, this isn't working. No, that, God,
like, one of them is Iggy. So, like, what do you expect us to do here?
Yeah, I mean, like, looking at that beach, it's like the women are just so much better than any of the guys there. Like, there are some, like, good guys there, but, like, oh my God,
I don't really notice the disparity until. Like Robbie hits on Raven, and I'm like,
it's like, oh, is that option? Is that like the best? Yeah. The best they can do here.
So this is when Robbie shows up with his new hair, and all the guys are like, oh, Robbie, his abs are so tight. And Christina's like, wow, all the guys are just like complimenting him, and the women were just all sitting just here like whatever, which is so accurate.
It also highlights the gap in personality, I think, between JoJo's men and then the women that would have been into those men.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think the Nick season of guys and the Rachel season of guys and the Nick season of girls are a more natural match.
Right, yeah, right.
Definitely.
Which is what we see kind of happen.
Right.
Mostly.
Which is interesting because I remember thinking that certain men on Rachel's season or certain women on Nick's season were cast for, like, Luke. Mm-hmm. And I thought of Raven. Raven, now increasingly I'm like, I don't think that would have been her thing.
Right, yeah.
No, certainly not. So, I offer a full, apology for any immediate judgments I made about Raven because she's truly the MVP of Paradise. I'll say that.
Yeah,
absolutely. So far. Like, right off the bat. And, I guess, like the thing that makes your mind go there is like Raven's from the South, like, you know, just Luke's from, you know.
Yeah.
But then it's like, oh, like beyond that though, like.
Well, I think she was initially introduced in a very traditionally Southern way. Like she had a package that was like, I'm all about faith, family, and folk.
Yeah.
I want to do the Alabama. Okay, like,
right, right.
And now, like, she's really been fleshed out as a person. In a way that makes it seem like maybe that's not the most crucial part of her identity, and that she's much more aware of like the issues with that identity than might have initially seemed, which came out a lot this week.
Yeah.
But she does go jet skiing with Robbie, and he says, "I'm very attracted to Raven," and you can just put a period at the end of that sentence because nothing more needs to be said. Which, like, he could have just stopped talking.
Yeah. But instead of stopping talking, introduces occupation, talked about, lovely conversation. Just really is like, oh, let's just talk about being an influencer.
Doesn't it rock, man?
Isn't it just the bee's knees? Isn't just the best?
He's an influencer. He has pocket squares. He has lapel pins. These are the things. And he loves Southern accents. That's all I got from his date.
He has a different pair of swim trunks for every day of Paradise, which also shows an immense amount of confidence. Like, I found it really charming that Dean was like, I just didn't pack enough stuff to be there the whole time. And Robbie's like, they're going to want me. They're going to want me to stick around. So they come back and Robbie is telling the guys, like, man, this is so my wheelhouse. Like, we were in the water and, like, I looked really great. And meanwhile, Raven is like, yeah, no, his abs are too much. It was scary.
She's like, I started drinking every time he did something to his hair.
Brushed his hair. Yeah.
She says he talked about being an influencer, and all the girls are like, no.
You know what I think? Like, Robbie must have been with, like, the influencer line. Like, he just must have been, like, recycling that from random bars that he's, like, going out to where he's just like, oh, yeah, it's amazing being an influencer. Brings, like, that to paradise. It's like, oh, wait, what? This doesn't make sense.
But,
like,
does that work on?
Yeah,
work
no, on? Very true. Yeah, I don't know.
For me, that's an
maybe media. L.A. is a different place.
Yeah.
But it's like, even in L.A., I feel like that's like saying I'm a failed something else.
Yeah.
So true.
Yeah.
So it's not looking great for Robbie, although he does not realize that. It's looking like Ben is going to get Raven's rose. Nick still wants Jasmine's rose. But then just as he's about to pull her aside and, like, open up to her, Matt gets a date card and he asks Jasmine. And
they go to a drag bar. So yes. I was really, really nervous when we, you know, could tell what this date was. And it went better than it could have. They could have done a lot of weird things with this.
For sure.
They could have gone a transphobic route. Mm-hmm. And I just kept thinking, like, thank goodness they didn't put two bigots on this date.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah.
Yeah. Jasmine really wants Matt to volunteer to get into drag. Matt's like, listen, Jasmine's worth it. I'll do it. And they don't do a great job getting him into drag, I have to say. He puts on, like, a standard black t-shirt bra over, like, under, like, an off-the-shoulder gown. I was like, mm-mm.
It's like,
You're like, that's not how that works.
But he's really game, and Jasmine is like, you guys should choke him. And I'm like, Jasmine, please don't make this your thing. Like,
she's
always,
always
the thing. Just look
that.
At the intro.
Yeah.
Oh, it's the, just the cards have been laid out on the table.
I'm
that's
like,
the thing.
Jasmine, it's not cute. It's like, violence is not adorable. And then it's supposed to be the first rose ceremony night. And the guys who don't feel secure. There are only like three guys who really feel secure about their roses. The other ones are kind of circulating, trying to make their case.
Yeah, Iggy and Diggy are like, we're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, honestly, it seemed like some of the girl that, like, Diggy was, like, viewed positively enough that I would expect him to get a rose. Iggy should be really worried.
Yeah.
And
Iggy even calls Alexis crazy, which.
Just adding on to the pile.
Crazy. Yeah. Just don't do that ever.
Yeah, it's like, and like, I think Lacey does this to Iggy too earlier, where she's like, it's okay, you know, if a guy isn't attractive. And it's like, why don't you just go up to me and say, like, you're welcome. I'm willing to date you.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It's so rude. Robbie is wearing a shirt with cartoon sombreros on it, and he thinks this is like a real feather in his cap.
Oh, yeah.
Like
yeah.
a tribute to Mexican culture.
He literally really says, I have the X Factor. Look at my shirt. There are sombreros on it. We're in Mexico and there are sombreros.
Well, he says, what more could you ask for? And I was,
it's like,
all I could think was so much.
Yeah, just so, like, just even a little bit more. Just like, just,
But, like, frankly, a lot more.
More. You can ask for some self-awareness. Yeah. You can ask for.
And then something happens.
Yes.
We see a producer kind of asked to steal Corinne. She's having a conversation with, I think, was it
Amanda,
Alex and Amanda? And then DeMario and Alexis are laughing, walking down the beach, and a producer takes him. And we kind of see everyone sort of reacting, like, what the fuck is going on? And that was kind of interesting to see. Like,
yeah, we don't get a lot of it. It felt a little stagey.
Some of it felt
very
stagey.
There was a lot of, like, cut it, cameras down. So they just, like, put the cameras down, and they had the stationary cameras.
I couldn't tell how much of that. Yeah.
It definitely felt like a way to be like, we are stopping production, but we are not actually preventing ourselves from getting footage to use later should we choose to do so.
Right.
It's like, this is a signal that we're stopping.
Yeah.
Obviously, eventually, the cameras were turned off. And then we're into night two at this point. We were left on this cliffhanger. And Chris is barefoot on the beach again.
With some, like, voiceover news headlines dramatic effect.
Yeah.
But first, they are going to show Evan and Carly's wedding, which is a weird start to this episode.
But which did actually happen during the production halt. So they're going in chronological order.
Right.
Tonally, it was weird.
Yes. And I felt, you know, at the time, I felt bad for Evan and Carly that their wedding was scheduled in the middle of all this.
Yeah.
But it did feel weird that they filmed it clearly with the intention to include it in the show that was on hiatus at the time.
Yeah.
But it was nice to see, like, Nick and Vanessa were there, Caitlin and Sean, a lot of Bachelor Nation people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And Jared, Wells, Julia, Jaden Tanner.
Julia and Jade were both bridesmaids. Julia also from Chris's season. Yeah.
And Wells was a groomsman. That was...
Yeah.
I mean, this wedding was totally adorable.
Yeah.
It was.
Their vows were really, really sweet. Evan was crying the entire time, which I loved.
Yeah. Yeah.
And Carly looked amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Those are my thoughts.
I felt a lot of difficult feelings because I was like, I already did my wedding and now I can't appropriate any of her ideas or her look. It's too late. Emma, it's not too late for you.
Well, I'll just keep it in mind. I'll put it on my vision board.
There you go.
Yeah. Yeah. People were giving her shit for the flower crown she had her bridesmaids wear, but I mean, Emma was at my wedding. I like a bold flower, so I really enjoyed it. I thought they looked pretty funky.
I get it. They were, you know, they were in Mexico on a beach. It didn't feel so off.
There were some very weird, like, culturally appropriative elements to the wedding where they really brought in, like, the shaman.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. I kind of chose to, like, black out momentarily and just ignore that.
There was so much else to worry about this episode.
I had, like, completely, like, blocked out, like, that even being a part of, like, how they met, too. Like, I remember certain things, but it's like, oh, yeah, that was the thing. Like,
I just really like them. And, we, you know, we've had them on the show. We've met them. They're a really sweet and genuine couple. We actually saw them when they were coming into town to see the musical Dear Evan Hansen. And
oh,
then,
wow.
They made a Dear Evan Hansen reference during their wedding, which Evan was then tweeting. Did anyone notice the Dear Evan Hansen reference we made? And I just, I enjoy a theater nerd. Yeah. So I love
noticed.
Them.
I didn't even see that tweet. And I was like, Evan, I see your Dear Evan Hansen reference. And then it's, you know, Evan toast to paradise and now it's back.
And then, No, I mean, I did feel just, because, like, that whole special was just, like, very sweet and charming and lovely and everything. But it definitely, I don't know, for me, when I was watching it, I never knew how to feel. And I'm, like, such a sucker for weddings. Like, I watch, like, proposal videos on YouTube and go into rabbit holes of that. So, like, I am a goober for stuff like that. But, yeah, something like with last night, I could really admire just, like, how great it was. But then I was, like, oh, I really, like, hate that it's a part of all this.
It's something that really bothered me is that they were definitely using it. And, like, Evan has made more specific public statements about this. They were using it as a way to show that Bachelor in Paradise is a good, healthy, wonderful thing because they found love.
Yeah, it's like,
and I'm like, listen, people find love in a lot of places. Some of those places are bad.
Yeah.
Some people find love in war zones.
Yep.
People find love in college, which some people like. People find love in high school, which most people don't. People find love in all kinds of situations that are generally bad.
Your successful relationship does not signal the virtue of an entire franchise.
Right.
And
it
doesn't have to. It shouldn't have to.
Right. It stands for itself.
Right.
That's great.
It's beautiful on its own. And I personally think that they should have gotten their own wedding special because they are one of the greatest couples to come out of this franchise.
Yeah, it's like I was just like so mad at the timing of it, you know, because and also, you know, not only were they using that in general as a way to prove themselves, it's like, okay, like look at what Bachelor Nation can do. Like this couple met here and it's like a beautiful couple. But then on a more specific level, they were putting it right before this intense second hour.
Right.
Where it's like, okay, what's like ease in with something like nice and fun and, you know,
and they're trying to fully position it as like, this is the good and this is why it's worth us pushing through this thing that traumatized at least these two people, regardless of what actually happened.
Yep.
They were left to deal with a lot of trauma, both DeMario and Corinne.
Like the message was, no matter how bad it seemed, wasn't it all worth it for this? And it's like, maybe not. Like, they would probably, maybe they wouldn't have met each other. They do both live in Nashville, and they both are on the show, so they probably would have met. Like, I mean, they would have found love. People find love in all sorts of places, and to imply that it excuses all kinds of sins on the part of the show is really gross.
Yep.
And then this is when we have the cast comes back to restart filming. And first, they're going to have a big sit down with Chris Harrison to talk through whether they should restart the show, how they feel about what happened. Obviously, they've all agreed to restart the show because they wouldn't fly them all down there.
It's like, oh, no, I'm just going to leave right now.
Right. Yeah. This is a ridiculous. So much of this was showy and.
Yeah.
I had a lot of mixed emotions about this segment. There were moments that I thought were kind of beautiful and good and actually successfully sensitive. Mm. A lot of it felt incredibly misguided, and some of it just felt kind of fundamentally dishonest. So there was sort of the whole range.
Yeah. It was just like very, also very guided and very heavy-handed, where it's just like, it's like, you're all okay with this, right? Like, you're all, it's just like, it was like,
That's what I mean by dishonest.
Yeah, you could take like every single thing that Chris Harrison said and just like add a comma and write after, after every single thing, because that was the tone of it.
Yeah. But he was like cross-examining that.
Yeah, exactly. It's like, okay, like just confirm. Yeah.
You can't deny that everything is fine, right?
Right.
Like, for example, you know, they all start to talk about how difficult it was. And I'm sure it was because they were under a lot of media scrutiny. And they also received a lot of social media backlash. A lot of the cast was really scrutinized for how they reacted. A lot of people had very firm opinions about what must have happened on the show before all the facts were out. I'm sure that was extremely difficult. They kind of framed it as, we knew nothing bad happened. We knew the show didn't do anything wrong. And then the media came and ruined
everything. Oh, yeah. Just the media. Just the
broad sweeping. Right. I mean, and I'm sure the three of us being members of the media are sensitive to that.
Yeah.
But also, especially in the climate and the really unproductive ways that, you know, our current administration talks about the media as though it's one coordinated entity. Like, these are the people that reported on this incident initially did so because people from the show, cast and crew, spoke to them. Like, they did their jobs and they reported on what they discovered over the course of their reporting. There were conflicting reports. Perhaps it is upsetting and had unintended consequences that those names were leaked. But that is not, quote unquote, piss poor journalism and a media that is trying to create something where there was nothing. This was national news that there were very serious allegations made and that a major franchise was shut down. This indicates something very serious. And of course, entertainment reporters would look into that.
Right, right.
Yeah, and, you know, I felt like it was really uncomfortable of the show to put the cast in the position of defending this extremely lucrative franchise. You know, like, as almost human shields.
Yeah,
right,
yeah,
they are a part of it. They're the most visible part. And they also are being asked to speak for a franchise that involves a lot of people who make a lot more money than them, who make a lot of money off of their suffering, no matter how much they are complicit in their own suffering. You know, they're it's a very weird dynamic.
Yes.
And then you have Chris sitting there also, who has made a great career off of this franchise, saying, well, what's really going on? Like, the producers aren't manipulating you, are they? What are they really doing? You guys aren't mindless robots, are you?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Like, it was very slimy.
Yeah, no, I think, the first one that just, like, made me cringe was when he singled out, like, Taylor. And it was like, Taylor, we've never made you drink, right? Right?
You know, No one is saying that they're putting the beer bong in your mouth and pouring vodka down it. No one has ever said that.
Also, that wasn't even the complaint. Perhaps, I'm sure there are some people out there, some viewers who think, like, this is completely scripted and everything is forced.
Sure.
But I think anyone who has actually spent time and looked into this understands that it's more about subtle manipulation that, yes, people go into this situation expecting some of that, and they do make their own decisions. At the same time, the show wouldn't exist and wouldn't be fun if they didn't put people in situations to provoke certain reactions. We know that's a part of it. And also, I think the complaint that a lot of people had was the question of, whether or not what happened between Corinne and DeMario was, you know, actually problematic had it happened off camera, why was there a situation where there were two intoxicated people having oral sex in a public place?
Allegedly.
Having oral sex in a public place while being filmed. And why didn't anyone step in? And that is still a question that exists for production, regardless of whether there was misconduct on the part of cast members found.
And they talk a lot about, you know, what, you know, Taylor says this, Derek says this, we're adults, we're not here to be babysat by production. But in the real world, if you're at a bar and you drink too much, where to the point that you are having public sex, if that is in fact what happened, and I will point out it is because the franchise has not revealed the results of their investigation that we still don't really know what happened. If that kind of situation transpired, or even if you became, you know, too sloppy, aggressive in any way, if you're behaving inappropriately, the bartender is expected to refuse you further service. Like, there are expectations of how social situations, you know, of how the business owners or how the authorities will react in order to minimize harm to people who have made irresponsible decisions. This isn't about whether they're responsible for drinking too much. It's about whether production also has a responsibility to not allow people to hurt themselves on their watch.
And this completely sidesteps that production would have any responsibility, because all they did was force the cast members to defend them and then talk about how this really, really hurt the crew. And again, like, all of those things could be true at the same time.
Absolutely. Like, I think all those things probably are true. I'm sure that they are close to a lot of the crew. I'm sure the crew was really upset. I totally feel for that. It doesn't mean that we can't and shouldn't criticize any actions taken while making the show.
And then, like, even also in that conversation when, I mean, they specifically brought up, it's like, oh, like, you know, we were being, like, accused of being victim blaming. It's like, even this conversation of, like, oh, we're, you know, we're all adults here, like, that kind of thing. Like, just because they drink, like, too much, like, perhaps, or something like that, like, then that doesn't just excuse not being responsible. You know, it's just like, it's like, oh, like, they kind of, like, deserve
it. Gets, or, like, incredibly dicey when you are drawing conclusions about sexual assault and consent as a whole from one particular situation. This situation, from what we do know of it, is not one that can really be a stand-in for many other real-life situations where allegations are made. You know, this is not a case even where two parties were telling different stories. No allegations were ever directly made by Corinne against DeMario. So this is just a very fuzzy situation. But then when you say general statements about, well, DeMario was really nice to all of us, like, that, that's actually not evidence of anything either way. That, that is probably true.
DeMario didn't behave aggressively towards me when I met him. Does not prove anything. DeMario reminds me of my brother while touching, and, like, I'm sure that affects Jasmine deeply. Does not prove anything, and yet it's presented in this way.
And the presentation, and this is not to say that we personally think that that DeMario did anything wrong.
We don't.
But the way that they are presenting this as a larger commentary on these issues gets just incredibly messy. As I said, I think there were some nice moments. I think Ben Z, you know, explicitly stating on primetime TV that continuous consent matters and that consent can always be revoked was great. I thought that Taylor's comment about verbal and nonverbal consent, I thought was seemed responsible.
She basically says someone can give you nonverbal cues of consent, but it's important to get verbal consent.
I thought that that was that seemed great. But some of the questions that were posed to the cast seemed like they would have been better posed to an expert. Like, why not bring in someone from Rain or another, you know, sexual assault, sexual violence organization? If you're going to go kind of classroom style, make sure that that information is buttoned up and totally responsible. And it's not necessarily – it shouldn't be the job of these cast members to say all of the right things in these situations.
I found it really weird and troubling that Chris Harrison would throw out the question of, can you consent when you're drunk – to a bunch of just like reality TV show cast members and then just let them speak unchallenged on that. Like Diggy said something that I found troubling, but that is also a very commonly held and understandable belief. We do watch people who are drunk hook up and we believe them to have given consent. Mm-hmm. But just having Diggy say, I think you can give consent when you're drunk, is really problematic to put out there.
Right. And that shouldn't be the responsibility of them to say as contestants. You know, it's just like it's very much going back to the whole thing of production using these people. It's just like human shields and just being like, okay, like we'll just
Like they said it. They all agreed. They all said it was fine. We got a little bit into, you know, the racial issues that obviously played into the way that this situation was perceived in the larger online conversation about it.
And I was glad that that came up.
Mm-hmm.
And
me too.
I was glad that Raven pointed out, you know, that she's aware of this issue being from the South. And it happens everywhere, but is probably, I think, for a lot of people more openly talked about in the South on both sides. That, you know, African-American men are often, like, accused of assaulting white women, even when the facts don't bear that out. On the other hand, I think there was this concern for DeMario's reputation that kind of suggested that being accused – and Ali Bartho puts this really well in her Vulture recap – that being accused of sexual assault is a violation that is on par, if not worse, than possibly having been assaulted. You know, like they're talking about his reputation with more concern than Corinne's reputation, which was also damaged, and Corinne's well-being. Maybe because they knew for a fact that nothing happened, but it really seemed like the preeminent concern was a man shouldn't ever have to feel like an accusation will be found on Google.
And also, and I do think that, yeah, that is a really unfortunate thing for both of them to be, you know, if nothing did happen, then it's really shitty that both of them have to be associated with this. But it is both of them.
Right.
Yeah.
And I feel I do feel for both of them in a very, very major way. And I also feel for the cast members who were given this responsibility to speak on all of these issues that honestly, like people taking entire university courses. Digging into.
Yeah. No, like that's what it boils down to is like all of this has many, you know, it's many complexities to it. It's a big conversation to have, and it's a very informed conversation to have. So the people having that conversation should be informed and not just like these random, you know, like people doing their best. You know, it's
like us, right?
No, very true.
No, and like I don't think that obviously we would be the right people to bring in to talk about this. Like Emma said, they should have had an expert in these issues. And like one thing that really struck me as being like incredibly irresponsible was that Chris asked the entire cast why Corinne referred to herself as a victim.
Really, which
just opens it up for cast members. You know, Danielle says she thinks Corinne did it to save face, which is a really kind of fucked up thing to say about Corinne. It's possible. But, you know, putting it out there like that really makes Corinne the
And also, if you're going to ask that question, we know Corinne is having a sit-down interview with them.
Mm-hmm.
Ask that to her. She's the one who can speak to why that statement was put together the way that it was.
Yeah.
And we also know that that statement came from her lawyer, which they do point out. But again, like that question should never have been posed. It is not relevant.
And it is worth noting that she did not say she was a victim of DeMario. She said she was a victim in the situation. And I think DeMario probably feels that he was also a victim in the situation. Maybe not of the show, maybe even of the press. But I think they both felt victimized. Raven also talks about how she has been sexually assaulted and she was in an abusive relationship. She doesn't want the situation to deter, and she emphasizes actual victims from coming forward.
It was like, this was so close.
Yeah, so close. Yeah, that was just like a general theme of that entire conversation.
Right.
Yeah.
It was like because not deterring victims from coming forward. That's good.
Yeah.
There's no need to imply anything about who's a victim in this situation.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I think the problem is they went into this where the show wanted them to make these pretty deep and important statements about cultural issues writ large. But they also, because they are embedded in this and understandably want to defend their friends, felt the need to also make sure that they were like framing the narrative in a way that fit how they perceive this particular situation.
Like, I understand what Raven was saying. She doesn't want this to deter victims from coming forward. The reality is that a lot of the ways that they talked about the situation are going to deter victims from coming. Because, like, you can talk about what was actually found and that DeMario didn't, according to the investigation, do anything wrong. But, you know, talking about how he always seemed nice to them so they knew that nothing happened, talking about how you're responsible for people you kiss and for what you drink, those are things that will deter people from coming forward.
Yeah, right.
So ultimately, this conversation was, like, really frustrating for us.
And, like, I would say, like, just, like, general thoughts on that is, like, as we talked about, that conversation had moments that came, like, so close. And there were very, you know, good things that were said. There were some really problematic things that were said. But then where I have a harder time with it is, like, okay, if you look at this conversation, like, there were some good and bad pieces. But then if you look at how it was all handled as a whole, and you look at the promos and, like, the trivialization of all of it and the leaning into the drama of it, it's like, that hollows it out. Like, that hollows out that conversation.
I totally agree.
Where, I mean, you're talking about, you know, like, what would deter people from coming out with, like, if they've been sexually assaulted. It's like the way that this has been handled would very much deter that. And how it's just being like, okay, well, like, people aren't going to take it seriously. That's what this whole entire thing felt like.
Yeah.
So that conversation was very kind of grain of salt in like the entire time.
Yeah, and then that's exactly the message that we got when they immediately moved on. And I think we have to sort of rush through this because we're almost out of time.
They
the rest of the episode—
They did like a verbal one-by-one vote. They decided unanimously to continue.
Yeah.
And we get to just Lacey going, "We're back, baby." So it's clear that the show is like, well, now we've addressed the serious stuff and now you can all move on and, like, tequila shots on us.
Yeah.
But not too many.
There are just like a couple of— like two or three broad storylines, which is that Alex was building something with Amanda, but while they were gone, he's worried that she no longer, you know, that's fallen apart. She no longer wants to give him the rose.
And she no longer does.
Which is correct, yes.
Yeah.
And they make, you know, some of the girls, while they're talking all this through, say that Alex made some rude comments to some of them while they were all away. Mm. We don't get any details on that.
I'm like, I want more on that.
It doesn't surprise me.
No, it doesn't surprise me at all.
Yeah.
Also, Alex's takeaway from Amanda finally very politely explaining that she, you know, is not interested in him is to say, well, like, I guess I just shouldn't be so nice and I need to be an asshole.
No, and like, and going back to that whole, like, you can find things to criticize Alex for, maybe leave out the short, but you can include like the, oh, like, there's some reeking of male entitlement going on right now. It's like, oh, I can't be a nice guy, I guess. Like, grill him for that. Grill him for that garbage opinion.
Like, he has to get rejected like three times because, first of all, Amanda's giving him nothing. He interrupts every conversation she has with other people. And then he's like, I'm never even seeing her.
Danielle even tries to warn him. Okay.
Yeah. Raven says you need to leave her alone. She is not interested. It's done. And he's like, I know. I'm going to go hit her with some Alex charm. Meanwhile,
Alex.
Dean and Christina went road tripping. They went back to Kentucky, where she's from.
And then Chicago. So they spent entirety of these 10 days together.
And also, if you think about just the Bachelor franchise in general, like a week together, like going, you know, back.
These guys have spent more time together than anyone in Bachelor history.
Yeah, exactly. Like they could pretty much be engaged at that point. That level of commitment.
I think what we really saw is like, how much does happen on the show, that amount just happened off screen. Like, they had this whole relationship. It was intense. Now Dean's not sure if he's ready to commit.
Yeah.
Christina's frustrated
just
that he's pulling
away. And it's sad.
Yeah.
Dean, don't fuck, don't fuck this up.
Yeah. Yeah, no, because, like, it just seems like, oh, like, that collapsed, like, so super quick. But it's like, no, it actually, like, had, like,
it's
a life.
It's been 13 days.
Yeah, it had a life. It just,
got
fleshed out entirely.
It lasted a lot longer than most Paradise relationships.
Yeah.
But it really seemed to fall apart, and Christina was left, you know. I felt annoyed at Dean in this conversation because he was doing a lot of deflection. Like, she was like, I need you to talk to me. And he was like, you're not talking to me. And she was like, what do you need me to talk about? And he's like, just open up about things. She's like, yeah. Oh, I think I'm being open, but like, it's hard to get anything out of you. And he's like, I'm talking to you right now.
Just like some real vague statements.
Yeah. I think I wrote in my notes that this is the first time I've really felt how young Dean is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. This felt very immature.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It felt very like teenage boy on the couch, like hood up. Yeah. Like, why are you talking
bad at
it? Yeah,
no,
yeah.
You're bad at talking.
Yeah.
Yeah. Derek and Taylor go on a date.
Yeah, they are really, it seems like their relationship has only been strengthened during their time away. Mm-hmm. And Lacey is just making the rounds of everyone and kind of negging them and being kind of rude and then saying, no one likes me. Like, no one
like,
wants to.
She just wants Daniel to come because apparently Daniel is the full package, which I question her taste in men.
Yeah.
Yeah. Just, you know. Strongly question it.
And the final kind of big theme is Jasmine and Matt. This also seems to be a situation where her feelings grew over the time that the cameras were off and his sort of faded and he seems to be pulling away and she is not happy about that.
Yeah. And like we've been seeing like some previews with like her. It's like, oh, if you want to drop my ABC or like whatever that line that keeps being aired over and over.
Good TV.
Right. So it seems like we have some foreshadowing that something's happening there.
I'm feeling a lot more sympathy with Kristen now because we've seen in the promos that Kristen is going to come in and maybe get with Matt and Jasmine's going to say, you know, you knew that Matt and I had a thing. You're a little bitch. And I'm like, well, it seems like Matt kind of wants to get out of this little thing. Yep. So.
It's like it didn't really even need the catalyst for that to happen.
Like, sorry, this is paradise. That's what happens. So that's kind of where we leave it. We don't get the rose ceremony, but we do see a new guy coming in for some reason.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Jasmine and Lacey both want someone new. And I wrote, and here he is, cliffhanger.
I think
we don't
it's
know
Daniel.
Who.
Yeah, I would Probably. Say, yeah. Yeah. I would say Daniel.
Well, we'll have to wait until next week to find out. And I just, it's hard to imagine waiting that long for 4 more hours of this hellish torment.
I somehow like always forget that it's like, oh yeah, they do this. Like they do this like every,
4 hours is too many hours.
I know.
It is. It's way too many hours.
Yeah. Just a bit.
All right. Well, I just am so glad to be done talking about it.
We did
it. But we had a great time. Yeah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting
thank
me.
Thank you for,
this is so
for
great.
Talking
yeah.
this through with us. We needed it.
Yeah. No, just some therapy.
Oh, God. And now, welcome to Feminism Fails, where we rate the most cringeworthy anti-lady moments of the week on our very own patented Feminism Fail scale.
1. You do you, bro. 2. That's questionable. 3. Not cool, people. 4. The 1950s are back. 5. Gender equality is straight up dead.
And now it's time for Feminism Fails, and God bless Bachelor in Paradise for just really bringing Feminism Fails back with a vengeance. First, all the comments about Alex's height, for example, Derek saying that maybe he's compensating for something, just not only unnecessary, but sort of using gender expectations against someone is not like – it's beside the point, and it's harmful to other people, and it works against the idea that we're all – equals and that we don't need to be expected to fulfill like aspects of the gender binary. So I'm just going to give that a 4 for being so pervasive. Even if it was supposed to be all in good fun, it's still harmful.
And while Alex's height certainly isn't a problem, him saying that he guesses he shouldn't be so nice after he gets rejected and instead should be an asshole to women, I'm going to give that one a 5. It really perpetuates this idea of the quote-unquote nice guy and that men deserve female interest and affection and you know, sexual interest for deigning to be kind and treat them like human beings. No, Alex, no.
Way to encourage toxic masculinity, guys. Next, Ben makes a weird comment about Robbie while Robbie's off on his date with Raven. He says basically, like, he's a beer at a barbecue guy and Robbie is a wine spritzer on the beach. That is not actually an insult. You can be someone who drinks beer at a barbecue and be a bad person. You can be someone who drinks a wine spritzer on the beach and be a good person. It doesn't matter whether you're a man or a woman. But he's clearly trying to feminize Robbie and thereby insult him, which is offensive to me as a woman, and it should be offensive to all feminists. So I'm going to give that a 4.
And we're not going to include all of the many things that we could discuss here from that sit-down conversation. We don't want to trivialize it, and we feel like we, you know, really got into how we felt about that earlier in the episode.
Yeah, just, you know, there were definitely feminism fails in there, but this doesn't seem like the most productive place to continue that conversation. But we do want to end with a little palate cleanser, a feminism win, if you will.
A delightful feminism win. Evan, in his vows to Carly, promises to walk through this life with her as equals. Yes, Evan.
That was so sweet. I'm going to give that a 5 just for making me happy. And I think that's all that matters is whether I'm happy.
And that is it for Here to Make Friends. Thanks to our guest, Brett Vergara, and of course, our producer, Nick Offenberg.
You can find us on Apple Podcasts. Please subscribe and give us a rating if you haven't. It helps other people find our show. And you can find us both on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Claire E. Fallon.
And I'm at Emma Lady Rose. Or you can send us an email at heretomakefriends@huffpost.com.
Aside from the possibility of a nuclear holocaust, we will be back next week for 4 more hours of Bachelor in Paradise. We'll see you then.
Spectrum One is a big deal. You get Spectrum Internet with the most reliable internet speeds, free advanced Wi-Fi for enhanced security and privacy, and a free Spectrum Mobile Unlimited line with nationwide 5G included, all while saving big. For the big speed, big reliability, and big savings you want, get Spectrum One. Just $49.99 a month for 12 months. Visit spectrum.com/bigdeal for full details. Offer subject to change. Valid for qualified residential customers only. Service not available in all areas. Restrictions apply.
Time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match 2 of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.